You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to episode 74 of Ravens Weekly, proudly sponsored by our good friends at GPM Group. Delighted to be joined, as per normal, by James and Jeff. How are we doing today, gents?
Afternoon, Matt.
Good afternoon, Matt. Afternoon, everyone.
Great to see you both once again. James, we're going to start today with a club shop update. Do you want to tell us a bit about what's going on there?
Absolutely. So we relaunched the online club shop a few days ago now. And the main driving force behind that was the fact that we had a bit of a kit room clearance. So we had a number of match-worn printed shirts that weren't going to be used. They were probably just going to collect dust in the kit room and probably go into storage for a while. So we thought, why not get them out there and let's see if some supporters want to take them off our hands. And that's exactly what we did. We got them out into the club shop online. And the response has been quite impressive. And Matt, I think you have some actual figures on that so far.
Yeah, well, we've sold over 50 shirts in, let's face it, it's what, been 2 days now, yeah. Hasn't it, I think? To sell that amount in that time, I think there are actually 4 shirt sales in the first 4 minutes that it all went live. It is a really rare opportunity, isn't it, to get your hands on a player shirt. It's not often that opportunity comes around. It's safe to say that the fan base in general has been really excited with that. And I'd just like to thank, you know, on behalf of everyone at the club, all the supporters who have taken advantage of that and bought their shirts. It's been fantastic to see. There were quite a popular few names in there as well that went really, really quickly, and people were a bit disappointed to miss out on. I won't name any of them right now, but I think we all know who they are. But yeah,
Steve
fantastic.
Canal wasn't one of them.
No, unfortunately, we didn't have that one. I think Ian Jeffrey and co. were a bit disappointed that there was no Steve Canal shirt, but there we go. That ship has now firmly sailed. But yeah, huge thank you to everyone. I think when we went into the post office to post these, we sort of walked in with 2 massive black sacks, bin bags, and I think the postmaster nearly fainted as we walked in. So it's been brilliant to see. And there's still some available on the website, bromleyfc.co.uk, and we can actually see them now, can't we?
We are,
James,
yeah, we can see them hanging up still. And I suppose it's important to remind people as well that it's not just match-worn shirts. We've also got some blank ones if you don't want any names on the back, and we also have the other items on the online club shop as well, such as the woolly hats. I know it's a bit out of season, but they will of course come in handy at some point, and a few other items like drawstring bags and things with the club crest on. So yeah, definitely check that out. It's on our website, www.bromleyfc.co.uk, and the online club shop is back live, which is it's great for us to be able to have that.
Indeed, James, and we've actually got a price list for those items if you'd like to take us through it.
Yeah, of course. So the kids' sizes are £15. Any replica adult shirts are £20. Match prepared shirts are £30. And just a reminder that we are not offering click and collect at the club. That is because this club is, of course, shut to the public still. So these items, when they are ordered online, they'll be posted out to you. But a group of people that the club is actually open to now is, of course, the Academy, who we welcome back on Monday, Matt.
Yeah, this is where I'd like to bring Jeff in, if possible. Step one, I guess, is out of the way now, Jeff. It was probably a very lengthy process to deal with the actual reopening of the site for the Academy, but week one's out of the way now.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic for the Academy staff, for the club in general, really. It's nice sort of first shoot. Green shoot, really, of recovery and trying to return to some kind of normality. Shout out to Mark Hammond, Tom Beaumont, Sue, everyone at the Academy, really. I think they've had our bits pretty straightforward compared to theirs. Our main job was trying to make sure the facility was safe to open and within the government guidelines and risk assessments and social distancing, etc. But obviously for the Academy, having to deal with the school, education authority, parents, school trustees, everything that they've had to do. It's been a mammoth task for them. Like I say, something they've done remarkably well to bring together so quickly. And obviously, I'm sure people just watching the news have seen how often things change and schools are coming back and then they're not coming back and they are coming back. But they've continuously worked tirelessly throughout all of it. It's great for us to be there at the end of it, to be able to open it for them and actually allow them in. But yeah, just really good to see. And it's been, what, 4 days now, and the pupils that have come in have managed to have face-to-face time with their tutors and their coaches, which is fantastic, which was a main objective of bringing them back. And like we say, we saw Smudge as well, Gaffer, down here every day this week, welcoming back the scholars and being a part of the process as well. So that's been really good to see.
To paint a picture just to the listeners about how it looks, there is a one-way system in place at the moment, a lot of hand sanitizers, PPE, things like that scattered around. Obviously, the training sessions take place on the pitch, socially distancing, like you said, and there's a socially distancing classroom in the venue bar at the minute.
Yes, so numerous regulations in place as an outdoor facility, outdoor sports facility, that we're considering that at the moment under the guidelines. We're not able to open any internal spaces such as dressing rooms or anything like that. So again, logistically for the pupils involved, having to bring change of kits and then already be in their kit is another change. But yeah, like I say, from when you enter the club, hand sanitizer, gloves and masks available. I know obviously another element of it is actually checking the temperatures of the pupils and scholars that have come in. So I know they've had the temperature guns as well. So again, it's just another risk prevention really that's in place. And like you say, Matt, yeah, we've got the one-way system. And yeah, they've been on the stadium pitch, which is great for them, I'm sure. And I know hopefully a lot of you have seen the photos and little bits on social media as well. It's great for the pupils as well to get a bit of exposure as well on social media. They might not be getting, usually it'll be the first scene plastered all over social media. So that's been quite good as well. I hope that highlights. I hope it's been a highlight for some of those scholars also. But yeah, like you say, I think it's a really good first step for us. It gives us an idea of potentially what this new normal is, regulations, everything keeps changing. And look, if that mid-September to late September date remains in the calendar and our players are going to return to pre-season 6 weeks before that, then yeah, we've got a good idea of, you know, the bare minimums that we need to do and have in place, and we've already got them. And to be fair, looking around, I don't know of too many other academy operations, certainly at our level, have actually managed to return in some shape or form. So again, massive kudos to Mark, Tom, Sue and all the team at the academy for making it happen.
Yeah, like you say, Jeff, one of the only academies to have done this. And it is kind of like you're alluding to there, like a dry run, I guess, for when some idea of reopening the site more generally comes about and when the players come back in as well.
Definitely, yeah. You see, you're reading the government guidelines about how they might change, and the whole we're going to come to the National League shortly, but the whole elite football, non-elite football, and current FA guidelines is, what is it, six people? Is it five yes. Participants and one coach? So yeah, you're just starting to see light at the end of the tunnel, as it were, and potential ways of making things work. But at the same time, we've got to decide. When's the right time to resume everything? Just because we can do something doesn't necessarily mean it's the right decision to do it. There's plenty of plenty of financial elements, etc., involved in fully reopening the site. And I mean, there's no doubt we're not fully there yet, and there's still a lot of hard work to do, and you know, some tough times and tough weeks still ahead. But like I say, massive step forward. Great to see academy pupils on site, great to see the academy staff around, great to see manager Neil Smith, Alan Dunn on site, a part of it as well. Yeah, it's just been a really big, what's it been, 12, 13 weeks now, it's just a really big sort of milestone, marker in the sand, as it were, of, you know, we're on our way back. So yeah, it's been fantastic to be a part of. Yeah, an absolute pleasure.
James, Jeff mentioned the photos there, and you've been involved with this process throughout this week, and turned your hand to photography as well. I think one thing that sticks out for me in all those photos is just the look on people's faces. Everyone genuinely looks refreshed to be back.
Yeah, couldn't agree more, and I think the sort of attendance figures from this week just backs that point up. I know the attendance has been near and on perfect, and that's a credit to the scholars as well, who, you know, this was an invitation basis. You know, they weren't compelled to come in, you know, it was there for them, you know, should they wish to. You know, the idea behind it all was just to get these scholars back out, you know, one-on-one coaching, and just to make sure that they're still in a good place physically and mentally. So
I just got to add on that note as well, when we talk about the risk element and opening up, I think one of the other elements they had to do, because obviously there's well over 100 pupils, I believe, and you know, scholars in the program. Those that have been invited in are the ones that are within X amount of distance, aren't they, from the club again? Yeah. So just limiting that risk of contact on public transport and stuff like that. Again, a lot of work I know from Tom and the team have gone into that to just identify which, you know, the safest number of pupils and the pupils that it, you know, it's,
and grouping them as well, sort of, because that's the whole thing now, isn't it? The bubble and making sure that, you know, that is such a close.
It'd be great to get Mark, Neil, and Tom on hopefully next week's podcast. I think we had hope for today because they could give a much more detailed explanation than we have. Because like you say, there are so many elements that have gone into it. And it's not just been a case. For the facility, obviously, it's been a case of signage, risk assessments, etc. But for the academy, it's been far more in depth than that. And it's not been a decision they've taken lightly. And safety's always been there. Their number one priority on that, and the fact that, touch wood, so far they've managed to manage this whole return safely and to the benefit of everyone this week has been fantastic.
I think props to particularly yesterday the scholars that were training out on the pitch. There was quite a lot of rain.
One thing you can't control is the rain.
Absolutely.
It was torrential, wasn't it? It was torrential. They carried on.
No, but I think, again, just coming back to the point, it shows how much they want to be here and back training, just playing football. It was great to see so many smiling faces, and you could really tell that the enthusiasm was just buzzing around the place. Even though there wasn't that many in each session, there obviously can't be. It sort of stemmed into the coaches as well. You could tell that they were so enjoying
seeing actual players on the pitch kicking a football rather than Cookie, for example.
No one should have to see that.
Definitely a milestone.
It's been fantastic to see. It really has. And big thank you to all the coaches for their continued hard work. And what a motivation for these young players to actually see Neil Smith, to see Alan Dunn on the site, watching them, overseeing what's going on. And hopefully we're going to see some of those in the first team in years to come. So big thank you to everybody involved at the academy. It's been a very successful first week, I think it's fair to say. Jeff, your National League update last week went down quite well. How about instalment two? There's been some more news this week, hasn't there?
Yes, even further updates. I said I had a few messages from people saying thank you for the summary and stuff, and I thought, how am I going to be able to top that this week? I don't think I am. There's certainly more to tell. So where did I leave it last week? When did we record it? Was it Thursday or Friday?
It was
prior to the amendment to the ordinary resolution.
At the time, resolution was coming through. It meant that there were going to be playoffs in our league, but there weren't going to be playoffs in the North and South. That was right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because of the government advice. Well, that all changed. rewind back to last Thursday. National League resolution change comes round. And like I say, we were part of the National League call, myself and Chairman Robin Stanton-Gleaves, on the Thursday morning. It meant there was only going to be one team relegated. That was going to be Chorley. And we were going to be saying goodbye to Barrow, congratulate them, as champions. And the playoffs were going to take place. So, with all due respect, if you're a Fylde and Ebbsfleet on that call, you were quietly rather happy. Unfortunately, though, the North and South had their calls in the afternoon with the National League, and they had rather a different viewpoint on all of it. I suppose quite rightly, in their case, challenged the view that the government had taken, or they had been told that the government had taken with regards to the fact that North and South weren't elite and therefore their playoffs couldn't happen under the government regulations. You're not allowed to return to training unless you're deemed as an elite athlete. I don't think I'm misquoting. The National League did state to clubs that, based on government advice, North and South weren't deemed elite. That's not really what has come back from DCMS and the rest of the government. Having Waterlooville and York, I know, have been the loudest activists in all of this. And
#promote2,
and they got onto the local MPs who got onto the government, and all a bit strange, really. Government came back and said that's not what we've not told anybody what the North and South is, and it's up to the National League. So we were expecting the form to come round on Friday for us to vote on. That was the day after. Nothing happened. Nothing came around on Saturday. Nothing came around on Sunday. Meanwhile, on social media, seeing plenty of tweets and posts from Havant and York and other playoff teams fighting for their opportunity to play the playoffs at least. And then on Monday, we finally received the voting form, and the only amendment was just a one line, really, that was taken out. The original resolution had a line in there which stated that there would be no North and South playoffs. Apologies, I'm not even sure if it was in the resolution or just the actual general guidance notes to clubs. But basically, it was made clear, the original resolution, that North and South playoffs wouldn't happen. On this resolution that came round, there was no specific mention of it. And again, basically, what this resolution now allows is for the playoffs to happen at all three levels. But again, based on government advice, based on requirements, all kinds of warrant guarantees and indemnities, etc., that are going to... Because there's so many different things at play. But basically, the resolution that all the clubs voted on, we voted straight away. We voted in favour for it, with all due respect. I think we all agree there should... Top of the table should be going up as champions. Whether, you know, PPG is the fairest way to decide it, personally. And look, if the teams that are in those playoff places after PPG wish to play it, and it's safe to do so, and it's possible, then, you know, they should have the opportunity to do that. I think if we were in the same position, we'd probably be asking for the same. So resolution comes around on Monday. All of the clubs have until Wednesday to vote for it. And then on, was it yesterday, did they announce it?
Yeah,
yesterday,
like last night,
late last night, wasn't it? As usual, I think we got it about 5 minutes before it was being made public. but a majority of clubs had voted for it. So out of the 24 clubs in the National League, and because we all get a vote each, there's 4 votes for the South, 4 votes for the North. So there's 32 votes up for grabs in total. So it needed 17 votes in favour. They obviously had that, and so that resolution passed. And again, like I say, what that resolution does do, it confirms a free champion. So I'm sure you'll all join us in passing our congratulations to Barrow, and also to obviously Kings Lynn and Wealdstone, who will be joining us next season. And effectively confirms Chorley's relegation as well, and the fact that there's no relegation from the North and South. So still technically, Chorley are going to be the only team in the whole of the football pyramid non-league footballing pyramid who have been relegated this year, which is quite so, something. Yeah. That's quite incredibly unfortunate for them. And I know I've read other things where they're thinking about fighting it and disagreeing with it again. So it's all going to rumble on. But the main point for your Havants and for your Yorks of this world, it means that the North and South playoffs can still technically take place. Obviously, that won't be to the delight of AFC Fylde and Ebbsfleet, because they're the two clubs that are at risk. If the playoffs do happen in the North and South, then those second promotion places from the North and South are obviously going to come straight up into our National League. And that means that the next two clubs after Chorley, which is obviously Fylde and then Ebbsfleet, will be relegated. So, all changed really from last week. And again, even though the playoffs can happen, how they happen, how much it costs for them to happen, has yet to be agreed. That's now, it's almost as if they're waiting for this resolution, and now they've got a board panel together to look at that. So the implications of obviously are testing. How on earth do you make sure that those players don't make sure that we don't increase the risk of it, of any players catching it and spreading it. And I mean, just if that was us, you're sitting there going, how would you do that? You know, you've got to test them before training. You'd have to test them after, ideally, or you'd test them again the following day before they come in. The tests are what, £150, £200 a player if you're training 4 days a week. So someone's working hard somewhere on a spreadsheet and a formula for how all this looks like. And it's one thing for a National League club when you're in the playoffs and you've got to bring all of your players off furlough, pick up their full wages. You've then got to pay for the tests. But we all know in our league, you're gambling for almost £1 million prize to be promoted, to be, you know, the difference between our central funding for the National League and the central funding for EFL is around 900 grand. So you've got to do the maths and decide as a club if you're going to do that. I think most of the indications have been from the clubs in our league that are in those playoffs, that they all want to go, you know, want to go for it. I saw, what was it, Danny Hunter, I think, at Bournemouth, said he's remortgaged his house to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the strangest clubs in all of it is Barnet. Obviously, with all due respect, I think it was not even 48 hours after the league had been, you know, postponed, as it were, that they were talking about mass redundancies and stuff like that. And almost ironically now, they end up back in the playoffs because of PPG. And with all due respect, they've got to ask the players, yeah, some of them who will be out of contract, some of them who probably might have already found another club for next season, unofficially or what. Oh, by the way, can you play potentially three more games for us? Potentially one. It's only a temporary arrangement for these three games. And if you break your leg during it and you can't get a contract next year, that's got nothing to do with us. It's going to be really interesting to see all these clubs and how they're going to, how they're going to happen. I mean, for Notts County, obviously, massive club. I mean, I think I saw something about them releasing 10, 11 players, but they still had a squad of 25. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I heard they're going back into training today. I mean, they're not even going to be in the initial playoff games. They're not in the eliminator games, are they? Because they're third, they're going to be further on. So, they've obviously got the financial clout and the capability to do that. They're clearly deciding to do it by government guidelines and decide how they feel best with the testing and stuff. Because as far as I'm aware, there's no official guidance yet from the National League about how training should be resuming. So they've obviously taken it upon themselves to seek advice and go about their return. When you factor all of that in, and then you look at the clubs in the south and the north, you have to wonder how many of those clubs, and I think I've seen Chester in the north, I think have obviously delighted that they're in the playoffs, but have sort of issued a caveat as if to say, hang on, we need to know how much it's going to cost first, or what requirements are going to be on us, before we can actually make a decision whether we want to take part. So it's incredibly strange. And the final other battle that's going to be ahead will be, I think York City have already made it clear. At the moment, if the playoffs don't happen, then there is no second promotion place. There's no second team will be coming up. The EFL, I believe, changed their caveat, which said if the playoffs don't happen, it's at the board's discretion who gets that promotion place. And I think York City are certainly on top of it, and they're trying to ask and seek assurances from the National League that they'll take the same view. And remember, the National League have tried to follow the EFL throughout this whole process. So it's going to be really interesting on that one, because obviously York are sitting second. So I think they were top, weren't they, before PPG? So they obviously feel massively sort of hard done by throughout this whole process. And I think they want some reassurances. If the playoffs don't happen, then second place in those leagues will get promoted, which is a tall ask. And I do wonder what would happen if that went to clubs, how they would vote. I think we're all pretty unanimous on the champions going up and playoffs happening, but runners-up isn't a promotion place. That's the whole point of the playoffs. So that'll be an interesting debate, dilemma, if it does happen. What's ridiculous is we are the 18th of June. The talk was the 18th of July for the first playoff games, and for them to be done by the 31st of July. So we're, what, four weeks out now? You've got to get the players back for training. So they're going to have to make some decisions pretty quickly. And I think clubs are going to need some kind of guidance on it ASAP. I think that's where it is. And the other thing is BT said that they were showing all of the playoff games, which obviously were the five that are in the National League. Would they show the South and North on telly? Potentially, I guess. For them, it's still a football fixture, I guess. But that's another talking point, something that's probably got to be decided by the National League and everybody. But again, I just don't see how, whoever you are, your Dartfords of this world, Bath City, your Chesters, Halifaxes, how can you plan until you know the costs? But like I say, we're not in the playoffs, so behind the scenes, potentially all those clubs in the playoffs are having those conversations already and they're getting a bit more guidance. But it doesn't look like that at the moment from what clubs are saying these last few days. And again, for the National League, a small group of board members, they've got a lot to do. They've got to work with the FA now and the government and all agree a safe way of trying to make these games happen, but surely a financially sensible way as well. So it really is going to be a tough situation for them, and I still think it's completely up in the air if the playoffs happen, certainly in the North and South. I think the National League clubs will find a way, and knowing what they're gambling for financially, will take a punt, and it only needs four of them out of the six to say they want to do it. So yeah, that's going to be really interesting. Like I say, for us, smack bang in the middle of the table.
Sit back and watch.
You're just watching it sort of unfold. And North could happen and South couldn't, and then there'll be another team coming up into our league, and only another one to leave. So that would be filed would lose out. So yeah, I mean, for those two teams, that's a killer, I guess, for them, because how on earth, it's bad enough trying to plan a budget for a new season now without knowing income, likely crowds, etc. Not knowing what league you're in, that's a completely different story.
I was going to say on that point, Jeff, to add fuel to the fire, it is already a massive gamble, particularly for a North or South club with the playoffs. But there is not going to be an off season, so you're going to be a month away from being in a league that you have potentially no idea about.
The playoffs are going to happen, should happen by the end of July. That's what they wanted, 31st of July. And the hope is EFL and National League will return mid to late September. So you are right, yeah. You would usually have an off-season and a break, and yeah, you'd have some downtime before pre-season. But realistically, your pre-season would be 4 to 6 weeks already, like you say. So what would you do? Would you give them a week off, 2 weeks off, and then you'd come back to pre-season? So it's going to be incredibly tough for those. It's incredibly tough for everybody. It's incredibly tough for us. How on earth do we plan? How on earth do we budget? Mm-hmm. How on earth do we prepare for a well-meaning, thought-out and predicted start date, but still not set in stone. Still not there. Still not concrete date. So, really, just when you think you've seen everything in football, something like this happens. It's going to be a test for everybody involved. I think for ourselves, I think we're, like you say, out of all the seasons you could finish mid-table and not be emotionally involved in the outcome of whatever these talks are and whatever these votes are going to take place, it's probably this year.
This is it.
So we do have that ability of not at least being involved in those scraps and those arguments. Like I say, you've seen Neil's working as hard as he ever does, during this period of time, and meeting players and talking with players and, doing what he can without, knowing certain things like budget, like start dates. You continue to work as hard as you can with the information you have to hand, and with every week and every passing day, there's more information to hand and we start to know more and learn more. All you can do is carry on working hard, like I say, make use of the information as soon as it becomes available and make the correct decisions for your football club, which is, I'm sure, what Robbie and the board and Neil as a manager will be doing. And like you say, I suppose the more and more we talk about it, the closer and closer we're getting. So it's not the worst thing in the world. I think that's where it is. I think that is a summary. I think, just really bizarre. What a change of... As of Thursday morning, we thought we all knew where we were. And I'm sure if you were filed in Ebbsfleet, you would potentially even open up the bottle of champagne to celebrate your survival potentially. Mm. So incredibly tough times for them. Just watch your space, I guess. And I suppose next week we could be talking about a completely different scenario again.
One thing we can guarantee, Jeff, is that as soon as there is any news, we will, of course, keep everybody updated with that. Moving on, Jeff, a club statement that was issued earlier this week that we wanted to touch on in the podcast.
Yes, thank you, Matt. Hopefully supporters would have seen over on the official club website a statement earlier in this week, club statement, United Against Racism. Obviously, it's something that should go without saying anyway. However, obviously incredibly disappointed to be made aware of the behaviour of a so-called supporter during a week by fellow fans. And a big thank you to them who did pass that on to us. I think it was via Twitter at first, the initial contact. And we did act as soon as we saw it, just to try and find out some more information. Obviously, I think the statement should be self-explanatory. I think we've worked incredibly hard over the years to make it clear our values and what we believe in, and the quality and diversity, and I like to think we've tried to make sure that we're a family club and a welcoming club, and it's most important thing is that when people come to Hayes Lane that they feel safe, and there's absolutely no risk of discrimination or racism or anything in any shape or form. So important that we acted on that, and I think it's important that we a timely reminder to anybody who calls himself a supporter of the club and doesn't believe in the same values and principles that the football club clearly do. So again, I hope we've made it clear that we'll be dealing with the individual, and we've made it clear how it just simply won't be tolerated. And I saw quite a few messages across social media in the end, just in the aftermath of it, and some from fellow fans that I've had the pleasure of knowing for over a decade, and made me feel incredibly welcome when I first came to the club. And it was incredibly sad to read some of the comments about the how they possibly fear or feel that they've lost, may well have lost their club in some way, or things have changed, or they don't feel as comfortable with terraces, etc., because of a certain group of fans or whatever. And really, I'd like to apologise if that is the case, and that is how they feel. And if we've got more work to do on that side, and I think we do, then clearly that's going to be our objective. I think we've got a great opportunity now with this enforced break, enforced reset, as it were. We've got a great opportunity to reset and remind everybody of our standards, our principles, what we expect from people who wish to support this club, and wear our club badge with pride, and we'll make sure we do that. So please be rest assured that we'll take all of these any incidents such as the one reported to us with the utmost seriousness. We'll investigate it, and we'll make sure it's dealt with accordingly, and you know, the people involved won't be welcome back at Hayes Lane. We'll make that clear moving forward, and again, I just like to apologise if we've not for any reason made that clear in the past, or dealt with things as promptly as people would like. I think, like I say, great opportunity to reset now with this break, and I can assure supporters that when we come back, we'll continue to make sure Hayes Lane is a welcoming community football club hub, whether it's midweek with our pitch hires, whether it's on a Saturday on the terraces. We all know why we come here on a Saturday, cheer the players on and try and do the best we can, and that needs to be the sole focus. So again, thank you to those supporters who did bring it to our attention, and I hope the club statement is remind supporters of what we stand for, our principles, and anything against them won't be tolerated.
A very important and powerful message, very well put, Jeff. A really community orientated club that we've got here, and sentiments and thoughts that everybody at this club will get behind. So thank you very much for that. We're going to move on now to the fans' question that we asked last week, and we had some good responses to this. Just before we go on to the responses that you've all sent in, Jeff, I'd like to ask you for your two favourite moments of last season.
You know, it's so long ago now, I don't remember it. So Bristol Rovers away, what can I say? Two things I can say. One, I didn't pitch invade.
And two, you definitely didn't pitch invade.
Two, I definitely didn't pitch invade. I remained within the perimeters of the away spectator seated area.
Within the structure.
potentially on the structure. However,
or hanging off it.
Just the pure emotion of that moment was spectacular. Clifton had just, we just brought Clifton on, and then he ended up going off. So we were down to 10 men at that point.
Well, yeah, sort of forced him back.
Or he was no, he sort of chucked back on.
He just sort of limping around, yeah. Wasn't he? Just
all I know. All I know. Look, straight away over the course of the two games, we'd better team. But even on that day, we held ourselves. One of Romani's first games.
He started the match, didn't he? He started at left back. I think it was the first time he played at left back.
Yeah. Honestly, and when we went the goal behind, it was like it's just same old. It's something we don't deserve, and it comes our way. Honestly, when that goal went in, it was just scenes, and I had a great viewpoint from where I was, ironically, but just looking around and seeing faces, young, old, faces, you know, just new, old fans, it was just brilliant. It was just pure, raw emotion. People had scarves around their heads. I mean, you saw on the video, Lord knows how many people are on the pitch. Yeah. It's people rolling down seats.
You weren't one of them.
I wasn't. Made that crystal clear. People were rolling down the seats. It was just fantastic, and everything, the whole journey up there, the journey back, made it all worthwhile. And I'm going to roll it in. I'm going to consider this the same moment, because we then had the replay, and our highest, I think it's the highest ever attendance in, must be 15 plus years in my whole time here. I don't think we've ever had a higher crowd than that replay game here. What was the attendance again?
4,558.
Peter Colchester, I remember back in 2010, that was 4,242. So, yeah, over 4,500 for Bristol Rovers. Perfectly good goal ruled out for offside. You know, that whole, those two games. Seeing the Glyn Beverley stand full.
And that noise, the noise.
The noise at night, under the floodlights at Hazy Lane, Tuesday night. We've had so many good nights in the past, late in Orients and Tuesday nights like that. It just felt like another one of those. And when Cheek's goal went in, it was going to happen.
What a ridiculous decision, honestly.
So, yeah, that's definitely number one. I'm guessing that's why you've asked everyone for two, because that's got to be everyone's. That's in everybody's
list, it's a common theme, isn't it, with the answers,
And the second one, I know you guys said on and off the pitch. I am going to have to go right back to the start. Playing Palace, I think, pre-season, the opening of the Glyn Beverley stand, you know, 1,500-seater stand. Yeah, it's just there's not. Of course, the romantic inside of you is you love the wooden benches, and there's so many fond memories of Peter Denny's penalty in the Ryman League playoff and everything like that. But at the same time, you're trying to progress. You know, you want the club to play at the highest level possible, and things have to happen. And you know that stands for for the football club, and just add something to the football club and the matchday experience. And, you know, with all due respect, when it used to rain here, unless you were in one of the 150 in the main stand, you were pretty out of luck, you know, and you're not going to be able to attract your next generation of supporters and become a family-friendly club if you can't give someone a seat in out of the rain. So it was such a massive, for me, it was such an important milestone in our club and where we're trying to go. I think it's an absolutely fantastic facility that we've gained. And the former players on that day, Frank Cole's on the pitch, the former players that come back, seeing them on the pitch and seeing the older generation of fans that recognise some of them. And
Jerry to open it as well.
Jerry to open it, and God bless Glyn Beverley. I know, you know, we were all desperate for him to be here and see the opening, and it wasn't to be. But, you know, Jerry said some lovely words on the opening of it. And yeah, it really felt like a marker in the sand and another milestone in our fantastic history. And yeah, they're going to be my two moments.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, three. I cheated a bit.
It is technically three. But James, yours?
Yeah, I think I echo a lot of what Jeff said there. Definitely the opening of the stand. I'll pick a game out, in particular, probably the Ebbsfleet United game, first home game of this league season. Seeing that stand packed and obviously two goals going in at that end and hearing that first roar from the stand. It's something that, as a football fan, I've experienced at different stadiums, but I've never really experienced it at this club just because of the acoustics.
Everyone getting up, everyone standing up at the same time.
And I can honestly say a chill went down my spine. And it just was something I'd never thought I'd experience at this club. When a goal goes in, you hear a roar. Yeah, you hear the stands sort of folding back into the place. And I just thought, wow, this is huge. This is Bromley Football Club in 2019. And yeah, that was definitely a huge moment for me. And I think the second one for me, a home win is amazing, especially against a local rival. But an away win is something that, you know, for seasons gone by, we've sometimes not had a lot of. But I'm looking back to Chesterfield away, especially a club of that stature, regardless of how they were performing.
Yes. 1-0 down, weren't we?
That was a proper away performance.
Smash and grab.
Everything about it was just brilliant, you know. So much controversy, I suppose, from the Bush red card, we can forget about the post red card.
Oh, for goodness sake. But you got sent off on the Sunday after the Tuesday.
Well, forget about that. But from the actual game, as you say, Matt, one goal, going the goal down and to then win 2-1. There was an own goal from
Will Evans.
Yes. Just to experience that as well for the travelling support. And then to sort of go after the actual match had finished, you know, players getting pelters from the home fans, that's always quite enjoyable. And then to clog up the main entrance to the Proac Stadium, players going on their Christmas do with suitcases and very strange fancy dress.
Who had the small pink bikes?
The pink bike actually came up in my dad's car, Jack Holland. Brilliant. Jack Holland a favour. We couldn't obviously take it up on the train, so my dad brought it up in his car. And I picked it up after the game and, yeah, gave it to him as they were leaving. But that's a memory that just sticks in my head, just the bizarre things that happen in football, is seeing the Chesterfield security sort of going, what on earth is going on here? Yeah. And it's about 30 suitcases.
I remember being in the tunnel after the game, and there was just like you say, suitcases, a pink bike.
Yeah, really bizarre.
It's not a normal tunnel, is it? It's a very grand entrance. You've got trophy cabinets, a very slick reception area,
desecrated
Iron Man
it.
Walking through it.
Yeah, it was very bizarre, and obviously the train station as well on the way back. If you guys remember, that was quite funny as well. That's my two moments. Just great memories from this. It was a great season. You know, it's a shame we couldn't finish it. I really did think after that Harrogate result we were destined for the playoffs. But anyway, that's me sort of getting on to other thoughts. But Matt, what's your two moments from this season?
Well, I'm gonna mix a couple in a bit like Jeff did, and Bristol Rovers away. I had a very different perspective to all of you guys. In the fact
you're up in the gods.
Was in the gods. Yeah, me and Paddy, one of our media assistants, were up in the press box, which was actually really nice environment in terms of the press that were there. However, directly in front of me were several hundred Bristol Rovers fans. And you can imagine, when our goal went in, those of you that listen to our commentary will be no stranger to the emotion, the outpour of emotion, the unbiasedness, 100%. We weren't obviously doing commentary that day because it was FA Cup, so I was just doing the Twitter updates. Paddy was doing a match report. Myself and him just absolutely lost it. But the noise from the Bromley fans when the goal went in, just that moment before I stood up to celebrate myself, was amazing. Oh, and the whole thing, to be able to look at it and take the photos, take the videos of the 500 Bromley fans, seeing Jeff from a distance on the structure, I think is the terminology we're going to use. And for me, I was just stood up shouting and screaming, people in front of me looking round, but that's normality of an away game, isn't it, really, Jeff?
It was absolutely brilliant. And like you say, I think even on the video, the game, the official highlights on the BBC, you can hear the roar of Bromley fans
under
that. It's a marquee temporary seating theme, wasn't it? I mean, it was just, absolutely fantastic.
And for an away league game for me, seeing as James, you went for one, Hartlepool away, the 3-2 victory, I believe, was
good.
Hartlepool is one of my favourite away grounds. The view from the press box is unreal. Not only of the pitch, but you see the coast in the background and all the ships. It's a really, really nice place to visit. And that was another fantastic 2 years in a row, another fantastic away victory there. Such a long way to travel. I think there were 30, 40 fans that made the trip. What a reward for them as well. And the journey is such a long one to get the result. And it was lovely weather. It was perfect.
And just
Rico with two and then Cheek.
And again, a lot of the sort of early games in that sort of September, August period, that whilst we were winning games, it was a lot of high scoring, sort of,
other teams coming
back as well. And that all as well. You know, we're sort of going ahead, being pegged back. And then, you know, half time, you're sort of drawing, you're like, now we're in a position to win this, and then to go out and Rico get that winner in front of the travelling support as well. In the highlights, you can actually see him run into one corner and realise that away fans in the other, and he just checks his run and goes back and celebrates in front of him. There's some great photos from that game as well. So that's a very good call, Matt.
Just to very quickly add a moment off the pitch, and that it's special for the whole club, really, but in a very different way to what we've spoken about previously, is how developed the community work that we're doing has become, and actually very recently, I'm not sure if we've actually mentioned this yet, but we've successfully applied for a grant from the National League Trust for the second year in a row, which we've never done before, and this will enable us to carry on the fantastic work that we're doing with disability in football, and is really, really emotional experience for me, having a close relative that has been through the special school system. And to be able to help those schools out and to be able to work with those staff members who give it their all every day is extremely emotional for me. And it's massive for the club because these people deserve an opportunity to participate in football. And that's what we're talking about. We are a really community-based club. And we've got so many exciting plans. We've really developed our women and girls in football. Like I said, we've been working very hard on disability in football. And we're now going to be looking at the older age group in the new season when that begins. So it's a really exciting time, not only on the pitch, but truly off it and getting involved and helping out this community that we live in. So
I think that's the winner then. Should we just buy off the
match? I'm not having that. He's gone for free. Hold on.
You set the tone. You started it.
That was the same. It was a two-legged game. It was the same day.
Yeah, yeah, different days.
Unbelievable.
But yeah, that's mine. So
that's amazing, Matt. No, absolutely. And I think it's incredible the work that you've especially spearheaded from this season. And
Right, what about the fans?
Well, crap, what about the fans? So that's all the Matt PR for this episode.
I'm just taking a bet. I'm only joking.
No, I just want to say thank you so much to those who have got involved, as always, with the podcast. We'll start with a roundup from the Twitter messages. And before we start, there's a lot of reoccurring themes, just as we've mentioned earlier on. But we'll start off with Mike Head on Twitter, who says one of his highlights was Adam Mecky's goal in the 5-0 win against Halifax. Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't bring that up beforehand. That was quite a home win, wasn't it?
Indeed.
And he also mentions the Notts County win as well. Oh, great, another fantastic home win earlier on in the season. That was, again, another baking
in the
hot
baking
day.
Heat, yeah.
That was just perfect. Alfie Doughty and, of course, Sean Mikulski, whose shirt you can purchase on
It's
still available. We're very surprised about that. It's the match-winning shirt.
Historic
against
shirt.
Against Notts County. It's yours. It's yours for £30. So get on the online club.
Plus delivery.
Plus delivery. Matt, next
is
one.
Is a necessity. Yeah, so Simo on Twitter says he agrees with Mike to go top, and that's another momentous thing about that Halifax game, was that they were top at the time, weren't they? We were second. The pressure was on them, and it really showed in that second half, 5 goals. The FA Cup goal at Bristol Rovers was brilliant, and I think we've gone in enough detail with that one. What a moment that was.
That's echoed by Paul Waldman on Twitter. As he says, for me, it's Bristol Rovers away, which was a simply brilliant day from start to end. And he also gives honourable mention to Rico Hackett, Fairchild's goal against Dagenham. Yeah, that was a great, on the TV as well.
With his family in front. Jeff and I were in the press box and Rico's family were in front of us. Jeff and I stood up going absolutely mental, and we've hit that point where, hold on, are we the only people going mental in this stand? But no, Rico's family, there were 4 or 5 family members in the stand in front of us, and they were turning round, giving us the fist pumps as well, and that was absolutely brilliant, and what a lovely moment to share with them.
Amazing.
As well. Dawn Bennett, an interesting one. Obviously, the highlight of an away trip was Bristol for her. And an amazing event for any Bromley fan, she says. But her business, Alpine Law Solicitors, had a great day as match day sponsors, picking Luke Coulson as the man of the match in a game earlier this season at home. And the Jungle Bell,
What's this?
Is this a play on words here, Dawn? Is it the Jingle Bell job?
Yeah.
Unless they're all dressed up as animals.
Tarzan.
Tarzan, 100%.
Like more information on that. What is that? Must have been like a Christmas themed.
Yeah, Dawn, I think you need to follow up that one.
We'll have to find out. Tim Wheeler, he mentions Dagenham and Bristol away. And he also mentions an off-the-pitch memory, which was, again, Bristol away. But he gives thanks to our chairman, Robin Stanton-Gleaves, for the coach travel, so he didn't have to drive down. Of course, thinking back about the actual day itself, free coach travel allowed
immense.
For those.
What a gesture.
Hundreds of supporters to come down to Bristol. Yeah, we have to give massive credit to the chairman.
Just remember the point, James. I don't know if you saw it as well, but just when all the coaches were
pulling
into
the car park.
One by one, sort of in line. It was an incredible
just
thing.
Just an Anderson travel posse coming down from London to Bristol. It was brilliant.
And the noise, as we've mentioned, made by those people was amazing. Alex Chambers is next, and he again says it was the goal at Bristol Rovers. The scenes in the away end were unbelievable. One of the best and most unforgettable away days that he's ever been on, and I'm sure a lot of fans echoing those thoughts as well, even those who haven't written into us. Certainly a memory we won't be forgetting.
No, not at all. Nathan Denny, he says, he mentions the Mikulski banger to beat Notts County. It was a great strike, to be fair, on the volley. Still can't believe I can say that we've beaten them. He also mentions Rico's goal at Dagenham and Redbridge on the telly. And he also gives mention to the Bristol games and Halifax.
There we go. That's four. Nathan's
that's four.
Had four.
Okay, so
I'm forgiven for having three now. So Nathan's
now
the leader.
Nathan, you've gone
four.
Very greedy.
Mark Tregent is next for him. His favourite top two moments were Bristol Rovers away in the FA Cup. An amazing day all round. And secondly, it's between, so I think we've got on the fence here.
Yeah.
So maybe it's three, Mark, not two. Rico scoring the winner against Dagenham Way or Hartlepool. He'll choose Hartlepool as it was his birthday. And we were just talking about how great that was for the supporters who've made the journey, and even greater for Mark as well, who was celebrating his birthday that day.
Rounding up today's responses. Over on Facebook, Tony Fletcher mentions the fact that he was taking his daughter to her first game, which is obviously a fantastic moment for any parent bringing them their child to a football game. And of course, beating Notts County. Yeah, two great moments there, Tony. Thanks
she must be a good luck charm.
Yes.
Hopefully you're going to bring her back, Tony.
Yes. thanks again, everyone, for getting involved. That we always love hearing from you. And I think, Matt, that's potentially all we've got time for today.
Yeah, just briefly, wanted to mention the 100 Plus Club. I know we went into a bit more detail with it last week. We have spoken again with John Richardson this week. A big thank you to him and Arthur for their continuous hard work with this. And we as a club are really trying to promote it now. It's a way that a lot of you have helped to support us through this time. And thank you to all of you who've done that. Another record-breaking draw this month. The draw is likely to be, or is going to be, I should say, on the 22nd of June, which is Monday. So if you are in the draw, keep an eye out. We will obviously get the results out to you as soon as we get them. But the prize fund is quite considerable now, isn't it? I think the top prize was about £300-something yeah. pounds last month, which is incredible considering what it was a few years ago. So big thank you once again to John and Arthur on that. Keep your eyes peeled if you're involved with that. Jeff, James, anything else?
I think we're there. One thing I might offer up is, should we give out another question? Or some sort of task to give to supporters? I was potentially thinking, running on the theme, I know it's going to be absolutely no use for a podcast, which of course is only audio, but I was potentially thinking, because we've obviously had the academy returning, and we've been able to get a lot of photos out from the academy this week, and also we've been running a photo of the day on our social media since the start of this coronavirus pandemic. I was potentially thinking asking supporters listening to send us their favourite photo from the season. So this could potentially be a photo they've taken either at a ground or at a home game.
With a caption so we can read it out.
So, there you go, we've worked it out. So if you could send in your favourite photo from the season. So if it's one you've taken or one you have stolen from us, either from Mark Avenel, Ed Boyden, or my brother Ryan.
Additional charges may apply.
Yes, but your favourite photo of the season, Bromley related, and give us a caption just describing either your feelings of that photo, what it means to you, your emotions from if it's a goal or if it's a tackle or something like that. If you just want to send us a caption, we can obviously read it out. And the photos will, of course, share across our social media.
And we can hopelessly try and describe the photos as well.
Yes, we'll do
no,
that.
I really like that, James. That's okay. A fantastic
Perfect.
One. And
nice.
That, I must say, in fairness to James, that was completely off the cuff.
Yep.
That hasn't been put in the script. I promise you that. So that's a really, really good one. So look forward to seeing your responses on that. You can tweet us the photos at Bromley FC using the hashtag Ravens Weekly. Best way to do it is to reply to the tweets that we put out about the podcasts, which lots of you have done. Don't forget the hashtag Ravens Weekly. You can comment on Facebook. Again, comment on the post. We are at Bromley FC on Facebook. You can email podcast@bromleyfc.co.uk, or we are on Instagram as well, at Bromley FC. Now, I really think that is it
this
time. Thank you, James, and thank you, Jeff, for joining me today. It's been another fantastic episode. Big thank you once again to our friends and sponsors at GPM Group, and for all of you who've been listening to us and putting up with us for so long. Stay safe, and we'll be back next week. Bye for now.
What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I